It's Your Money with the Investor Coach, Paul Nichols, the show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about the traditional financial planning model. Paul believes education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can and will lead to peace of mind. He uses simple solutions grounded in academic research from leading financial minds at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and the University of Chicago, including several Nobel laureates. You do not need to know everything if you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things. Paul Nichols is the president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisor. He is a member of the National Ethics Bureau, the Better Business Bureau, and member of Strategic Coach Quarterly. Get ready for some common sense clarity coaching with the investor coach, Paul Nichols.
Welcome to the show. It's Your Money. It must be Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. I'm your host, Paul Nichols, the investor coach. We're here to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing as we do every week. And it is another home game weekend. I am joined by Luke Miller, as usual. Hey, Luke, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great. Yourself, Paul?
I'm doing well. Who are we playing this week?
We are playing Temple.
That's right. I got an invite to the game, but I'm going out of town. So I can't stick around. I've got to take care of business. So we are coming to you, not live. We're pre-recorded. We will be live and in color next week. In fact, we are going to be talking about the subjects that we promised to talk about the last 2 weeks. Actually, the infinite banking concept. Have you paid, when you think about all the purchases, Luke, that you've made in your life and the money that you've spent, you know, raising up four kids and a house and cars and all that kind of stuff, okay? What have you spent more on in your lifetime? Do you believe you've spent more on taxes or interest?
Yes.
We're going to focus on answering how is it that we can avoid some of those interest charges that crop up in our life along the way, and at the same time, how can we handle taxes with a banking concept that I personally have implemented and use, and we teach quite regularly in our practice, right, Luke?
Definitely, and the individuals who use it love it.
So we're going to teach you how to become your own banker, really, how to set up a bank, a family bank, if you will. It's not like a bank down the street, but it's a bank that you'll be able to make purchases from and recoup interest and so on.
And the one thing that you need to keep in mind, though, is that you don't need gobs of money to do this. You need discipline more than anything else to be able to set it up.
And it's a mechanism that's going to help with that once you understand it, see it. And, of course, that's where the coaching comes in.
There you go.
That's why we are here. We're here to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing. You know, we believe you don't need to know everything if you have a coach teaching you the few right things. And if you caught our show last week, it was pretty passionate. It was probably the most passionate show because I really am passionate about seeing people taken advantage of and some of the trickery, for lack of a better word, that may be used in the financial services industry, unbeknownst to unsuspecting investors. In fact, I think we're going to follow through on that a little bit this week. Luke, we've got so much feedback from last week. We got people that were calling in appreciation. We got people that were thanking us for being out there. We had people saying, we're so glad someone is out there who's got the guts to tell it how it is, and to really expose some of the, what would the word be? Some are the phrase, some of the techniques, I guess, that are propagated in the industry. And, you know, the vast majority of advisors out there are hardworking, honest, diligent people. The challenge is they're part of a mechanism that is skewed for the firms and the large broker-dealers and not necessarily the investor. You know, whenever you hear someone who is with a broker-dealer say, I work for you, you got to realize they're doing the best they can to help you, but the fact of the matter is they don't work for you. They work for the broker-dealer. You know, they get a 1099 from them, which is why we broke away years ago and said, you know what, we're not going to be with a broker-dealer. And I used to be with a bunch of large firms. I'm not going to mention their names, but you would know them. Large institutions that have commercials on TV on a regular basis that are outfits that when you're in this industry, a lot of people don't know the difference between a RIA, a registered investment advisor, like we are, and we're registered directly with the Securities and Exchange Commission in the state of Pennsylvania. And we have a corporation that's registered directly with the Securities and Exchange Commission. So we have to dot all our I's and cross all our T's. But RIAs in this country are held to a different standard than your average registered rep. I used to be a registered rep with a large broker dealer. I basically got a 1099 at the end of the year from that broker dealer. No, it was a W-2s. I forget now. But anyway, I worked for them. I was an employee of the broker dealer. And one of the things that people don't realize, we just talked about this in a blog a while back, Luke. We were talking about the difference. What was it? The difference between
a registered investment advisor and a broker, stockbroker, or broker dealer. Someone who uses a broker dealer, excuse me.
And really, there is, here's the difference. When I was with a brokerage firm, and they've got, they're a pretty large firm, they got three initials. but anyway, when I was with that firm, the only rule that I had to abide by was something called suitability. And if I was going to make a recommendation to someone based on what they were telling me I should recommend, by the way, I would make that recommendation. And all I had to do was fill out a form that was held to what's called a suitability standard. In other words, I had to put the folks' information on there, what their net worth was, what their risk tolerance was, what their objective was. And if I filled out that form, then I had done due diligence, so to speak, by basically recommending something that was suitable. Well, the pros and cons of breaking away and becoming a registered investment advisor is I don't have that luxury of just adhering to suitability anymore. I have to, as a registered investment advisor, a representative of my company, Financial Abundance, which is technically a registered investment advisor, I have to adhere to something called the fiduciary rule. Or a fiduciary standard. And what that basically means is it's not just a suitability form that's filled out. It kind of ties into something, ladies and gentlemen, called the prudent investor rule. That's part of the regs and stuff in the industry. But what the prudent investor rule basically says is that you have to recommend not what's suitable necessarily, but what's in the best interest of the client.
That's a pretty significant difference. And a lot of times, and I've seen it, where client doesn't necessarily know what's in their own best interest.
Well, if they did, they'd be investing for themselves.
Right.
And most of them don't, and most of them don't do well. And that's me included, prior to an academic approach to investing. But also, they're paid differently, Luke.
That's another big difference. And I think that's what makes the RIA so much more beneficial to the client
and conducive to a relationship that can create peace of mind.
Right.
Because when I was with the broker dealer, I was basically commissioned.
If you sold something, you made money.
If I did, and I didn't make any money. Okay.
So it didn't matter how the investments did. It just mattered that you sold a product.
Which is part of the reason that they make a lot of recommendations and there's a lot of trading that's done in the industry, okay? Where with a RIA or a registered investment advisor arrangement, by far, there are some that are different, but by far, it is a fee-only type platform. So when you start thinking about making recommendations and those types of things, if Luke was my client and I made a recommendation and the market went down and I was a registered rep or a broker, I get paid. I get paid on commission. If the account went up, I get paid. If the account went down, I get paid. It makes no difference because I sold something. Okay? But that's totally different with the registered investment advisor, isn't it, Luke?
Yeah, it's the exact opposite, I guess.
If I make a recommendation and someone's account goes down and my fee is based on the value of their account,
your fee goes down.
And if I make a recommendation and their account does well and the value of it goes up,
then your fee goes, the percentage stays the same, but yeah, the amount of money you earn is higher.
So it's a little different arrangement. And in fact, just about any book you read by any SEC attorney, and there's several on our website, Financial Abundance Inc. We have Financial Abundance Inc. That's INC.com. We have a whole list of recommended reading. One of them is, Does Your Broker Owe You Money? Written by a SEC attorney who practices in this area. Just about anybody, that any type of reading that you do, advice that you get, says go with a fee only type arrangement. The reason that an RIA is held to a higher standard, and that is the fiduciary rule rather than suitability, is it's a lot harder to become an RIA. That's why you see most guys and gals that are not. But I didn't really plan on talking about this today, did I, Luke? It just kind of came out because I felt like after last week and all the feedback, and thank you so much. I really appreciate all the feedback because Luke will tell you, I was a little uneasy about last week's show. I was very comfortable with the information. But at the same time, anytime you come on a public format like this and speak your heart and your mind, you're sticking yourself out there. And I wanted to, I don't want to offend anybody. That's not my intent. My intent is to help people.
Right. Well, and I think that's part of the idea of today's show is really to just, you know, last week we pointed a lot of fingers. We showed a lot of the errors. And we kind of got into the solutions, but we really didn't dig in very deep. So I think that opened the door for today to really make a positive show out of it. And let's show them what's right. The idea to show you as an investor what might be better for you than what you're being taught right now.
And all the feedback that we got was positive. We didn't get any negative feedback. And the positive feedback was basically saying we want to hear more.
Exactly.
We want to hear more. Okay, we understand that there's a lot of trading happens in the industry. We understand that we, the advisor, whether we do the trading or the manager of the mutual fund does the trading or the rep that we work with does the trading, we ultimately pay for it. And if you have the industry that chases the market, which we're going to end up doing the market update in the last segment today, Luke, and it's pretty incredible what's going on in the market. In fact, we're so excited because as we were looking at a number of accounts today, we have the vast majority of our clients that are back in the black.
It's amazing.
And we're excited about that.
In less than a year.
Yeah, after the debacle of 08. But, you know, we didn't have clients losing 30%, 40%. The only ones that did that were aggressively invested. You know, in fact, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, Luke, how many people we talk to that come through the office that tell us, yeah, I lost 35, 45% last year. I said, what, were you an aggressive portfolio? I didn't think so.
Right.
I thought it was conservative.
They really didn't know.
And that's a shame. You should know what your fees are, ladies and gentlemen. You should know what you're paying in fees. You should know what the downside of your portfolio, what could you lose in a down market? You should know what the risk amount is. I mean, these are, you know, when you start listening to all this alpha, beta, omega stuff where they throw all these terms at you and correlation and all that, this is not, the industry is not as complex as you might think it is. There's only 20 things you need to know or 20 questions that need to be answered, right, Luke?
Yeah, and really, when I first came on, I was lucky if I could answer three of them.
Well, before I started an academic approach, I might have been able to answer five after being in the business for several years.
And after, about a year and a half, 2 years working with you, I'm comfortable answering just about all of them.
Well, you know, I often make this statement. I'll take any one of my clients that's been working with us for a year, that's been to our quarterly training programs. I'll put them up against any advisor in town. And I'll tell you, I believe that they will know as much about what needs to be known as it relates to investing than a lot of brokers that are in the business. Because a lot of brokers in the business are just like I was.
Well, and that's not an indictment on the brokers by any means. It's more of a praising of the system we have and the clients we have.
And an indictment on the industry.
And an indictment on the industry not teaching the things that should be taught.
Yeah, and in fact, pick up Arthur Levitt's new book, Taking on the Street. It's also on our recommended reading list, and you'll get an inside glimpse of what's going on. Only got about 30 seconds before we break. Again, it's a football Saturday here in Happy Valley. You're listening to It's Your Money, the financial show that pulls back the curtain on the industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. When we come back, we're going to get into breaking down the three huge components of academic investing. Our goal today is to give you a little more meat to help you understand a little better of what is the right thing to do. And hey, you can always check out our website, Financial Abundance Inc. .com. In fact, you can go listen to our shows either on the website or you can go to iTunes for those of you that are more tech savvy and go ahead and download the podcast. This is Paul Nichols with Luke Miller. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Paul Nichols here, joined by Luke Miller. You're listening to It's Your Money, the show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. And we're kind of doing a follow-up, right, Luke, from last week where we talked a little bit about the way the industry works, pulling back the curtain on the trickery and deceit and lies and unconscionable actions brought on by the need for people to line their pockets with other people's money. Did I say all that out loud?
Just to name a few. Hey, that was last week's show.
I'm sorry.
This week's show, you know, it would be unconscionable of us to point out all the wrongs without giving you the rights.
That is correct. And so what we want to do is talk about an academic approach to investing. In fact, we kind of have a new phrase in the office, don't we? It's our new phrase is...
Discover the science of investing.
That's correct. Let's discover the science of investing. We heard this outfit somewhere. Their phrase was... What was their phrase?
Discover the art of retirement planning or financial
something
planning
like that.
Along those lines.
Discover the art... Art's pretty expensive.
And not everybody likes it.
No, this is true. So anyway, what makes us different, Luke? Why are we special?
Well, because we're doing things nobody else is doing. We take the emotion out of investing.
What do you mean by that? Because when I understand what you say, but when you say that we take the emotion out of investing, how does that apply to most people's situation?
Well, when you're emotional about something, you make emotional decisions. And let's face it, they're not always the most rational. So when you can take that irrationality out of it, you put science in its place, in the long run, you benefit from it, and you know what you're doing, and it gives you that peace of mind.
You just made me think of an analogy, and I don't know if this is going to be appropriate as it relates to what we're talking about. But it kind of reminds me, I have daughters, and you know, I have three children, and one's, you know, not even a teenager, should be a teenager here in a few months, you know, what's interesting about, it's kind of like love, you know, or puppy love or whatever. How do you feel? You remember how you felt when you're 15 or 16 versus when you're 35?
Totally different.
And why is that? Because is it education? As more life and more life experiences allows you to be less emotional because you have more education. And I think the direction I wanted you to go with the emotion was that we take the emotion out because managers, mutual fund managers, are going to look at different reports and this and that and trying to anticipate where they think the market is based on their education. But also it comes down to an emotional judgment call. And a great example of any of you that have tried to go to the computer and allocate your 401k investments, you know, you're looking at all these different funds that you have options for, and generally what you're doing, all you're doing is looking at star ratings and returns of the past.
So you're looking at the history of these funds.
And so you're looking for reassurance emotionally that this must be a good fund, let me buy this going forward. When we believe that you can take 50 years of science and, I don't want to say override, but trump, if you will, the emotion, fear, you know, buyer's remorse, these types of things. Whenever you do something, the more education you have about something, the less emotional the decisionary process is going to be. And unfortunately, a lot of investing is done emotionally. And part of that is the lack of information that is out there as it relates, or the complexity that is propagated in the industry. And what ends up happening is people try to then make calls that are going to make them feel good emotionally when it may not be the best thing to do. And so when we say to take the emotion out, we believe you don't need to have any emotion, but really to just apply the science. And when we talk about the science, there's three parts to modern portfolio theory, or what we call free market portfolio theory. That's what we practice, free market portfolio theory, utilizing an institutional platform and institutional funds. Now, an institutional fund would be different than a retail fund. What would be an example of a retail fund, Luke? And I don't want to throw Luke in the fire here, but he doesn't study this much as I do.
A retail fund is pretty much anything. You go to a stockbroker and you say, I want to buy, Vanguard has a variety of them, Fidelity.
A whole bunch of outfits out there.
There's thousands and thousands and thousands of them.
A lot of people's 401ks are retail funds. They're not institutional. You can go on and any schmuck. Is that a word, schmuck?
It is. It's not really nice.
Oh, it's not a nice word? I saw that on a movie once. I thought that was a good word. The way they used it was. No, anybody can go on. I jest, ladies and gentlemen. Anyone can go on and buy a retail mutual fund. But institutional funds are funds that you need to have large pools of money to purchase. So anyway, What are the three components of free market portfolio theory? Well, the first component is something called efficient market hypothesis. Originally, it was coined by Louis Bachelier, that's Bachelier, in his 1900 dissertation called The Theory of Speculation. And I know Luke has read that, as well as additional research by Paul Samuelson, with MIT. MIT is a fairly decent school up in the Boston area, I believe, isn't
it? Yeah,
I
think a couple people have heard of that.
Yeah. And then Burton Malkiel, which is a very, very common and well-known name in the industry from Princeton. I think it's the Benheim Center for Research is where he, if he's still there, I'm not sure if he is. And, of course, our friend, Eugene Fama with University of Chicago. The idea of the efficient market hypothesis is that professional managers as a whole cannot beat the market. Efficient market hypothesis supports the idea that the existing stock prices reflect all the relevant and knowable information, so it is impossible to speculate and forecast future prices, which is exactly the lie that the industry propagates. You want to add anything to that, Luke?
I think you said it all, but just to make it simple, the price that a stock is using all knowable information.
The only thing that changes that price
is unknowable information that becomes knowable, and the instant it's knowable, the price reflects it.
Like
good, bad, indifferent.
Yeah, like Bear Stearns.
Right.
AIG, the morning that all came out. But unfortunately, the industry wants to propagate this concept that by studying your portfolio every day, that they're going to have some insight the rest of us don't have and be able to catch those things.
Well, it's interesting. We even get faxes every now and again at the office, which I find kind of amusing. But they're telling us this new hot stock pick of the week, this small tech firm in Silicon Valley that no one's ever heard of, but they're ready to just explode because they got a government contract. All that stuff is already known. By the time it's printed on our end of the fax machine, everybody knows it.
Or we just got a new one in the mail today. The one that was about you can actually, there's a fund you can invest in for independent films. It's kind of interesting. But anyway, once costs, and we're going back to efficient market hypothesis, once costs are considered, speculative analysis underperforms a random walk approach. Efficient utilization of efficient market hypothesis is that it is engineered a broad market portfolio comprised of various asset classes of investments without the need to speculate on future prices and earnings. So all we're simply saying here, ladies and gentlemen, is we believe the market's efficient, free markets dictate the price of goods and services, and that we want to not try to beat the market, but we believe the market's efficient and overall the market goes up, kind of like walking up a flight of stairs with the yo-yo. And so you want to own all of it.
And we like the returns that the market will give.
And when you start to figure the cost of chasing the market, it's very expensive. And we can prove that to you. You just got to give us a call and we can get a portfolio analysis done for you. That brings us to the second. So efficient market hypothesis, or we believe free markets work. The second is something called modern portfolio theory. Now, this was developed by the 1990 Nobel Prize winner, Harry Markowitz. Professor Markowitz was the underpinnings of market portfolio theory, and that they are that portfolio risk can be reduced by holding various asset classes that have dissimilar price movement. The cliche, do not put all your eggs in one basket, is a simple way of explaining that since different types of asset classes do not move in step with one another, it is important to have different types of investments to manage risk. Modern portfolio theory, and by the way, everyone subscribes to this, right?
Look, at least they say they do.
Well, yeah. Modern portfolio theory states that there are two specific types of risk. Systematic risk, this would be specific risk that cannot be diversified away. Recessions and interest rates are example of the types of risks that cannot be diversified away.
Things like we just experienced in the past 12 months.
Politics
or so.
In the past. Okay. Right. Unsystematic risk. This is known as specific risk. This risk is associated with owning individual stocks, i.e., the market has inherent risks. The risk can be diversified away by increasing the number of holdings in the portfolio. It's the umbrella suntan lotion. You know, you don't want to just own umbrellas. You don't want to own just suntan lotion. You want to own them both because you want to be up when it's raining and up when the sun's shining. And that's a very simple way to think about modern portfolio theory.
And the one thing to add to that, just to make it clear, because when I first heard that, I said, well, don't they just cancel each other out? But the idea is the market in the long run goes up.
It always has.
Two out of 3 years, it's up.
And one out of 3 years, it's down.
So in the long run, it's continued to grow since the beginning. So when you use that idea in mind, then that takes that argument of don't they just cancel each other out, and it gets rid of it.
Again, the picture, ladies and gentlemen, that you know, and I'm a simple person in my thinking. I like to take things that are complex, simplify them so that I can just hang them on a hook in my brain, and that is that basically the market has consistently gone up, but it goes up and down. So if you walk up a flight of stairs and you're playing with a yo-yo, that's kind of the picture. I mean, the market has always consistently gone up. We have chunks of volatility, like downward volatility in 2008.
Someone dropped the yo-yo there.
Right. Well, someone taxed the yo-yo and said, hey, the yo-yo's gone. Somebody find it. We better find $1 billion to buy some more yo-yos. But that would be local yokels that were doing that or whatever. I was trying to think of a spinoff of yo-yo. But anyway, yada, yada. But anyway, you know, going up, the market goes up over a period of time. It always has. We've recovered quite a bit back from the downward of 2008. And you got to realize, over the long haul, one-third of a portfolio's appreciation is reinvested dividends. And that leads us to kind of, let me save the other two pieces for when we get back. I want to talk about, when we get back, something called the three-factor model and the whole idea of rebalancing. Because rebalancing is the absolute key to a well-diversified portfolio, to long-term returns, and hedging risk, diversification. You got to keep rebalancing. But with that being said, I wanted to just offer up, we have a course coming up for you local folks. It's a course that is taught in 200 universities across the country. It's sponsored by South Hills Business School here locally. If you'd like to attend that course, just give us a call. It's $50 tuition. $50 tuition. It's a six-hour course. 230-page textbook comes with the course. And we spend 6 hours really getting into some nitty-gritty. Go ahead, Luke. We got about a minute.
And $50 would include a guest. So your spouse can come with you. We
right.
encourage spouses to join together because really it's a two-party system. Both parties need to know what's going on.
Yeah, and you can either call South Hills directly to register for that and ask for Peggy Reams. I want to say 238-1990, but don't hold me to that. Or you can call our office directly, but it's in South Hills Business School, October 1st, 6th, and 8th, and 13th. So it's either two Thursday nights or two Tuesday nights. We'll be right back. You're listening to It's Your Money. Is your financial advisor putting his money where his mouth is? Too many financial advisors tell their clients to buy investments that they would never invest in themselves. In fact, Morningstar has revealed that only 47% of U.S. stock fund managers personally own the funds they manage. More than half of the fund managers don't even invest their own money in the funds we're supposed to put our life savings in. Is the story same for the person who's giving you your investment advice? Ask your financial advisor if he has invested his own money in the same funds he has told you to buy. At Financial Abundance, we personally own the very same investments we are recommending to our clients. That's how we've done it for years. So you can see why we are so motivated to help our clients succeed. Because when our clients succeed, so do we. So call us at 814-867-5745 and see how we can help you. That's 814-867-5745. Or visit our website, financialabundanceinc.com. Back to It's Your Money. My name is Paul Nichols, the investor coach, joined by Luke Miller. And we're following up from last week's show, just discussing the market, investments, some of the techniques and strategies that are used to bilk you out of your money. Did I say that out loud again?
See, that's not what we're talking about this week. We're talking about the strategies that suit the investor best.
Doggone it. I'm sorry. I just keep getting so doggone crazy about that sometime. But anyway, we want to make sure we get the market update in. So let's kind of finish up where we were talking about. We were talking about the three components of free market portfolio theory. We discussed efficient market hypothesis, which has been getting a little bit of play lately by some of the active managers.
Some negative play, interestingly enough.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Actually, there's one guy out there that said it was the downfall. What caused the... market downturn in 08, which is interesting because it's very rarely practiced. So, but anyway.
Small percentage of people caused the entire downfall.
Yeah. Well, you don't know what you don't know, I guess, you know. But anyway, we were talking about an efficient market hypothesis and the idea of free markets and the fact that all knowable information is factored into the price of goods and services. We went in and talked about modern portfolio theory, which is what Professor Harry Markowitz won the Nobel Prize for in 1990, along with Merton Miller and William Sharpe. And that really speaks to diversification, umbrella companies, suntan lotion companies. You own one company unto itself, it's fairly volatile. But by owning two of them, you can increase your risk and lower your volatility. And by the way, no.
You just said increase your risk.
Like I said, slash that, reverse it, as Willy Wonka would say. You can increase your return and lower your risk. And by the way, people love volatility, don't they, Luke?
At certain times.
They love it when it's up.
Yeah,
but
the recent volatility, as in the past couple months, it's been a wonderful thing.
Yeah. In fact, that just makes me think, for those of you local, you got to pick up the Town and Gown in November in the financial services section. We have an article that's going to be in there. But
well, that's in the financial services guide.
Oh, the financial services guide of the new Town and Gown that'll be coming out in November, where we do an article that has nothing to do with the market, really.
Interestingly enough.
Yeah, it talks about income for life models. But boy, there's just too much information out there, isn't there, Luke? We are producing way too much information.
We're going to have to go back to a two-hour show.
You know, with the radio show, and should we let the cat out of the bag on the new thing?
We can.
Let's go ahead and do that.
You recorded it, so it's ready to go.
That's true. Starting in October, I will be the new investor coach. Well, there wasn't one before. I will be the investor coach on WJAC Channel 6 News every Thursday night. At least that's the plan to start in October 1st. I'll be doing a segment on there. And then
that's the 5/6 o'clock?
Yeah, 5 news. To 6 evening in the evening, and then... and then Friday morning, 5 to 6, and then again 6 to 7, and I think on Sunday. I'm not sure. We haven't got that ironed out yet, but I'm excited about that because it's another format for us to educate people, and this all came about by them listening to the radio show. Isn't that ironic?
It's a wonderful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. Gotta love America and the opportunity that we're afforded by being Americans. Isn't it great to live in a country that you can get up and do what you want to do every day?
You can take control of your own destiny.
It's great. And thank God for the people that have sacrificed for that ability. I don't want to get off on a patriotic sentiment, but every time that thought crosses my mind, I'm so proud to be in this country. And folks, I've been to a lot of other ones. I used to do a lot of international travel, and I'll tell you, every time I got back, whether I was in Asia or Central America or South America, I was so happy to get back to the States.
Home sweet home.
It's interesting how many people in this country, to get off on a little tangent, talk about how great it is in Europe and never been there. I mean, spare me, okay? It's dirty over there. And obviously, there's cool places in history and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, am I getting a little political there?
Yeah, we need to get back. We don't have that much time
back
to get through
track.
A lot of information.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about the three-factor model. Eugene Fama and Kenneth French of the University of Chicago identified that there are three factors that explain investment returns in a portfolio. By constructing portfolios based on research, you have the potential to capture returns in the market. You know, French and Fama developed the three-factor model. Most investment portfolios are constructed utilizing a simple-factor approach or a single-factor approach. The single-factor approach, known as capital asset pricing model, that's a mouthful. We call it CAPM.
Trying to find deals?
No, it's called CAPM in the industry. And it says basically that stocks are riskier than bonds, but provide a higher return than bonds. William Sharpe, the 1990 Nobel Prize winner, first expressed CAPM in the early 60s. Messrs. French and Fama discovered The other two factors in the early 1980s by researching stark returns going back to the early 20s. So basically what these guys figured out is where did 90, they figured out where 96% of the returns come from in the market. There's kind of a running joke within the academics that whoever figures out the other 4% is the next Nobel Prize winner in economics. But the free market portfolio theory and what we call capital market investment theory utilizes the three-factor model by engineering and constructing portfolios based on three factors. These factors are the market factor, that is, what mix of stock and bonds are in the portfolio, what mix is in the market versus what is in cash or cash equivalent, if you will. The next one is the size factor, what mix of small stock that you own versus what mix of large stocks. We know that we get a premium by owning small stocks of 1 to 3%. And they also, the other factor known as the value factor, what is the mix of value stocks. Value stocks, a good example of a growth stock would be a Walmart. You know, good earnings, they get the best deals when they go to borrow money. An example, that would be a growth company, right, Luke?
Right, but you're going to pay more for it.
Okay, that's right. Now, a value company is a company that's considered to be a distressed company. A good example of that would be a Kmart. Mm-hmm. Okay, just in, you know, I'm just as painting a picture, Walmart, Kmart. Kmart's more of a value, Walmart's more of a growth.
They're both good companies. It's just you're going to, there's a little more risk with Kmart, so you have a little more opportunity for returns.
So basically, to finish up here, as it relates to discovering the science of investing, we're talking about three components of free market portfolio theory, and this is what guides us and guides the academics and the science of developing portfolios and capturing returns in the market. One, again, is the efficient market hypothesis. Second is modern portfolio theory. And the third is the three-factor model. Now, what ties all this together, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and foes, is the fact that you need to rebalance your portfolio every so often. Now, I totally disagree with the guy that says he's looking at your portfolio every day. That's a bold-faced lie. Get real. Let's be serious, okay? But what happens is every few months, you need to look at your portfolio and say, is it out of whack? What do we mean by being out of whack, Luke?
Well, if you, for example, and we'll go over this in a market update, but emerging markets is up 61%. So your the percentage of your portfolio that's in emerging markets is probably higher than it should be to be.
Because
to
it's
be,
up.
To be, to
so it's weighted heavier because that happens to be up. So what
right.
do we got to do?
We have to sell some of those off.
Right. We always sell.
Sell high. Buy low.
That's just the opposite of what the industry does, which is why $100 billion a year, not a decade, not a millennium, our century, $100 billion a year is spent chasing the market. So basically, we need to monitor the portfolio, and I don't mean daily. Let's get real.
No, it's a, if you're in the market, it's a long-term investment. You're not going to look at a long-term investment every day. You'll drive yourself nuts.
Let me do what I, let me say, put down what I wrote here. That way I stay right on track. And that is, we monitor portfolios to ensure that asset categories do not deviate from the intended asset allocation weights and targets. By selling asset categories that have exceeded their target weights and buying more of the underperforming targeted asset classes, we are adhering to the maxim of selling when prices are high and buying when prices are low. This monitoring process is an ongoing discipline that is introspective of future economic forecast, stock market outlook, and adheres to the principles of modern portfolio theory and efficient market hypothesis. We don't know what's going to happen in the market. No one else does. Anybody that tells you they do is a liar. And if I can be any more bolder than that, I can't think of another word. It's a bold-faced lie, because if they did, what would their motivation be for telling you?
Wow, I have to wipe that off my forehead.
Seriously.
Paul. No, it's a good point. If you knew what the market was going to do, you'd probably tell your friends and family and go somewhere tropical and live on the beach.
Which brings us to our market update, my friends. And this week, as in every week, we want to show you each asset class or index in the market so you can get a well-rounded view of what's going in the market, because most of the time we only see the Dow, the NASDAQ, and maybe the S&P on the TV news, and that's just to give us an overall idea of the economic condition of our country. But it's very important that we look at every index across the board so we know how things are going. So Luke has been diligent in keeping up with this, and this would be an update as of?
September 16th, so Wednesday.
Okay, a few days ago, okay, as you're listening to this. The Russell 2500 Index measures the performance of small to mid-cap companies in the U.S. equity universe. How are they doing?
Year-to-date, they are up 30.53%.
smoking. And how often do we see small in most people's portfolios?
Rarely.
It's amazing. Russell 2000, and I'm not laughing because you don't have it. I'm laughing because they don't get it. Russell 2000 index measures the performance of small cap or micro. So these would be small to very small.
Year to date, 25.01%.
Boy, it must make sense to own small, huh? 25% and 30% respectively?
I'd say so.
Yes, ma'am. Did I say ma'am?
You may have.
I said man. Okay. Russell 2000 Value Index measures the performance of small cap value companies. Not growth, but value.
Up 19.85%.
Value is actually one of the lagging, really, compared to everything else.
Which is kind of scary.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, it's bound to come up.
It will. It always does. The Russell 1000 Value Index measures large. So we just did the Russell 2000, which measures small value companies. Now we want to look at large value companies. How are they doing, Luke?
17.03.
It is a beautiful thing, isn't it? And how about the old S&P 500, which is what we see in most people's portfolio? In fact, we normally see a 50% plus weighting.
At least, yes.
Unless the international's up or something else is up and they're chasing it.
Well, right. In 6 months from now, when we start when we do some more analysis.
Something else is up.
It'll be whatever's hot at the moment.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But anyway, back to the S&P 500. It is up 18.32.
What is the S&P 500? It's 500 large, predominantly growth companies. These are U.S. large companies.
Small segment, really, of the entire pie.
Yeah, it really is. It is the smallest segment of our entire portfolio weighting. There's no doubt about that. Large U.S., but that's predominantly what we see. And that's because of the bid-ask spread price, which we don't have time to get in today. But bid-ask spread is where you normally see a lot of the fees. You don't want to say that too fast, boys and girls. Morgan Stanley Capital International. This would be the world index. These would be large and well-developed countries, Australia, United Kingdom, New Zealand, Spain, etc.
Year to date, it is up 28.25%.
International's up, okay. How about the Morgan Stanley Capital International Emerging Markets? This would be emerging countries, Argentina, Brazil, Korea, Malaysia, Mexico, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Russia, South Africa, etc.
There's going to be a test on this later. Now, this one I had to check twice because I couldn't believe it. It is up 61.01% year to date.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, when you see an asset category that's up 61%, would you have rather been in it all along, or would you rather have got in it when it was already up 30%? This is what the industry does as a whole, a lot of active managers chase the market, and unfortunately, they miss a lot of action.
You miss the run-up.
Morgan Stanley Capital International IFA, which is Europe, Australia, and the Far East. This would be basically everything developed, excluding U.S. and Canada.
Year-to-date, it is up 26.49%.
It is a beautiful thing. Don't we love it when it's up?
It's a wonderful thing.
Yay, team.
It's a lot more fun to do this.
I just looked at mine this morning for the first time in a while. I look at my clients' portfolios a lot more often than I do, and I'm certainly not looking at them every day. I can look at the market and know where we are, you know.
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is the S&P year-to-date is up 18.32% or so. But you said something in the very first segment that the majority of our clients are in the black. So
yes.
That just goes to show how beneficial being diversified is, and truly diversified. Not just having a lot of stuff, but having a lot of stuff that correlates negatively with the other stuff, you just can't beat it.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to get into a position where you're not controlled by emotion and you're not focusing only on trust, but really understanding the 20 things that you need to know, we can help you with that. All you got to do is give us a call or check out our website and order our investor awareness guide. It's complimentary to my listeners. You want to check it out? Check us out on WJC Channel 6 coming up starting in October. iTunes. We're out there. We're all over the place, okay? Town and Gown. A lot of stuff going on. South Hills Business School. We got a course coming up in October. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get educated. You don't have to trust. How's trust work for you? How about getting educated so you know what's going on? Hey, have a great weekend and go State!